Stephen Moore withdraws his name from consideration for a Fed seat.
It was a setback to Mr. Trump's hopes of placing political allies on the Federal Reserve.
And just how many jobs were created in April? Here's our best guess.
The economists that we surveyed expect that about 190,000 jobs will be added.
Plus, Facebook is building a cryptocurrency payment system. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story this morning, the tumultuous non-nomination of Stephen Moore to a seat on the Federal Reserve's board, here's what you missed. There were two big stories that had to do with Facebook, which broke late yesterday. The first is Facebook's announcement that it would ban personalities whose views it deems too inflammatory to be shared. That included the far-right talk show host Alex Jones. Mr. Jones apologized in late March to the parents of the Sandy Hook victims for saying that he thought the shooting was a conspiracy.
My opinions have been wrong, but they were never wrong consciously to hurt people.
The move to ban Jones and others comes as Facebook tries to be more proactive about removing controversial content. However, some of the people who were banned said the move constituted censorship. Separately, here's a new one for you, Project Libra. That's the secret code name for a project within Facebook to help launch a cryptocurrency payment system. Facebook is recruiting banks to help it with the effort, but the barriers are high. Cryptocurrencies have a relatively niche status, and Facebook's battered reputation amongst users and regulators certainly doesn't help. And Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh has resigned over a book scandal. Here's her resignation statement as read by her lawyer.
I am sorry for the harm that I have caused to the image of the city of Baltimore and the credibility of the office of the mayor.
Ms. Pugh made more than $500,000 selling her self-published children's books. They were titled Healthy Holly, to companies, including some that benefited from her official actions. We're reporting that the resignation is a stunning fall for Ms. Pugh, who up until this year seemed poised to run for and win another term. Now, our main story this morning, Stephen Moore. Yesterday, he withdrew his name for consideration for a Fed seat. That makes him the second person to officially withdraw after President Trump said that he would prefer to nominate them for a seat on the Fed board. To get the backstory, Charlie Turner spoke with our reporter Paul Kiernan from Washington, just a half hour after Paul was speaking with Mr. Moore himself on the phone.
President Trump says conservative commentator Stephen Moore has withdrawn from consideration for a position on the Federal Reserve Board. Mr. Trump tweeted the news of Mr. Moore's withdrawal, but didn't say why Mr. Moore changed his mind. Let's get details on this from Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Kiernan, who joins us via Skype from Washington. Paul, first of all, this came after Mr. Moore abruptly changed his mind, didn't it?
Well, I don't know if changed his mind is the right way to put it. I spoke with Mr. Moore a little while ago, half an hour ago or so, and he actually told me that he and Lawrence Kudlow, the White House economic advisor, had basically decided to withdraw him from the Fed candidacy last night.
Now, that's news. That's a big scoop. So, you know, the reason that he gave through this PR firm was essentially not the real reason. He mentioned unrelenting attacks on him and his family.
Yeah, I'm sure that those played into it. But what he mentioned to me was that there was a lot of opposition from Republican senators to his candidacy. I think what typically happens in these scenarios is the White House will have a frank discussion with the candidate for an appointment about their odds, and typically they will make the decision to withdraw. Now, Mr. Moore didn't say that he had come to a definitive decision last night, but he said he hadn't spoken with Larry Kudlow since last night. And then Trump tweeted today that he withdrew. So we don't know what happened in there, but we do know that he wasn't being entirely truthful when he said that he was not pulling out.
And you mentioned the Republicans. There was enough Republican opposition to Mr. Moore to sink this nomination or this planned nomination.
We had half a dozen senators or so expressing concerns. In the case of Herman Cain a few weeks ago, we actually had four Republican senators going on the record saying they would not support him, which was enough to sink the nomination. In Mr. Moore's case, it didn't quite get that far, but there was a lot of concern being expressed, which, again, at this stage is not a good sign.
And this was another setback for President Trump. You know, the second of two Fed nominations or intended nominations to go down.
So one point that a few observers had made was that in abandoning the conventional White House nomination process, where you go through a short list of candidates, you vet them, you talk to people on Capitol Hill about their confirmation chances before you actually name them, Mr. Trump actually came out with two guys who had a lot of baggage, Herman Cain and Stephen Moore, and had, from the get-go, very low chances of actually getting confirmed. So, yes, it was a setback to Mr. Trump's hopes of placing political allies on the Federal Reserve. And we've spent a month and a half on these two nominees. And at the end of it, Mr. Trump isn't getting either one of them.
Paul, the pick of Mr. Moore was controversial from the start. Tell us why.
Well, he's got a lot of economic views that are well outside the mainstream. He's called for returning the U.S. to the gold standard, and he's had a lot of inconsistency. Between 2010 and 2014 or so, when the U.S. economy was weak, he had argued against quantitative easing. He had argued for basically tighter policy at the Federal Reserve. Now that the economy is strong, he's been arguing for looser monetary policy at the Federal Reserve. The only thing that's changed since then was in 2011, 12, 13, a Democrat was president, and in 2019, a Republican is president.
And he's also got some personal baggage, you know, controversial articles on women and some personal financial issues.
Yeah, he kind of made a career for himself writing these politically incorrect columns for the National Review and other publications, in which he kind of, you know, made inappropriate, disparaging jokes about women. Again, because he wasn't vetted by the White House before he was named, he had an unsealed divorce lawsuit that contained allegations of emotional and psychological abuse by his ex-wife against Mr. Moore, and, you know, unpaid alimony and child support. And he had a $75,000 tax debt claimed by the Internal Revenue Service. So none of that was helpful to his candidacy.
I have one final question. Do you think advisors are going to try to persuade Mr. Trump for his next pick to go through the normal vetting process?
Your guess is as good as mine, Charlie.
For our full coverage of the Federal Reserve, open seats, and the direction of the central bank, you can head to WSJ.com. On to markets, and we've got a fun one for you today. Have you ever heard of the dollar smile? Basically, if you look at a graph of the relative value of the dollar compared to other currencies during recessions and big periods of growth, well, there's a notable grin. But our markets reporter, Soumya Vaishampayan, told me that might not be the case forever. So Soumya, first up, what's the theory again?
Basically, the dollar smile theory says that the dollar does well when the economy is very strong, because that boosts the allure of U.S. assets, and when the economy is really weak, because the dollar is a safe haven. That's actually a pretty unusual dynamic for global currencies. If you think about the Japanese yen, it's sort of thought of as a safe haven, and so it only does well when the rest of the world isn't doing well. But people sort of think now that this dollar smile theory might not last forever. Say there's a recession, and all of a sudden the Fed is able to cut interest rates much faster than other central banks, exactly because it has already been more aggressive than its peers in raising interest rates recently. Basically, it has more ammunition to ease. So that can make the dollar less appealing for investors and dent its normal safe haven bid.
And now the SCED. Here's what to look forward to later today. It's Jobs Day. We'll get a snapshot of just how well the U.S. labor market is doing when figures are released at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, the expectation is for another Goldilocks report, one that's not too hot but does show a healthy pace of job creation. Eric Horath, our labor reporter, says you can also expect that the past year's pickup in wage growth will continue.
Workers' wages have improved over the past year, and that improvement probably feels pretty good for those that have gotten raises because the cost of living hasn't jumped that much. And, you know, economists expect this, the trend to continue in April, where workers are receiving, you know, maybe about a 3% raise from a year earlier. One thing, though, I would note is that in previous periods when we've had extremely low, below 5% unemployment, it's really only happened in two previous periods, the 1960s and 1990s, workers' wages, even adjusted for inflation, were growing at a stronger rate during those times.
And Warren Buffett has said that Berkshire Hathaway has begun investing in Amazon. He's expressed regret in the past for not investing in the company earlier. But in an interview with CNBC, he clarified that it wasn't that he personally had taken the stake, it was one of his portfolio managers. The revelation comes ahead of this weekend's annual Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting. If you're going, or even watching from afar, we've got a bingo game on our website for the true obsessives. Finally, yesterday, shares in the vegan burger company Beyond Meat had the strongest stock market debut of any big new company since 2000. They closed up 163%. Now the focus turns to lab-grown meat and fish, which, as we're reporting today, is still incredibly expensive to manufacture. That's why some companies in the space are trying to position their lab-grown tuna, for instance, as a luxury product. What do you think? Would you buy it? Have you tried a Beyond Meat or Impossible Burger? Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.